Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Now, welcome back, and let's meet the Waterford hurler who once made county, but is now the most exciting and upbeat pop star to emerge from Ireland in some time. He's a great writer, singer, he's flamboyant, sometimes emotional, a musician, and a very fit live performer as well. Known in his school roll call once as Chris, but to his big base of fans across Europe, he's only Moncrief. And his first album, Maybe It's Fine, has just come out. It's all the buzz, and he's been working for years to get to this moment. Moncrief, welcome to studio.
Thank you so much for having me. What an intro.
And congratulations.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You deserve that intro. You absolutely do. This is a huge moment, isn't it? Because we have mutual friends and I know that you've worked for many, many years to get to this point.
Yeah.
Like, it's a tough thing to do, isn't it? To get the album out with a big label.
Yeah. I mean, it's always been like very independent since the beginning. It's been a, like, there's been no big viral moment. There's been no big industry sort of push. And it's just been people connecting with it and connecting with the songs. So it's really special to get to this point, yeah.
I think it's really important to say that because we think sometimes an act can arrive organically, but really they're industry insiders who have decided, haven't they, to make someone a big star in a particular moment.
Yeah.
You've had to do it the slow, difficult way.
Yeah. I mean, but I think everything happens the way it has to happen. And I think that's the kind of the basic message behind the album. Maybe it's fine. You know, maybe it's fine that it took like 4,000 days to get to this point, you know, and maybe everything, the songs wouldn't have been the songs without them, you know.
I love that they're upbeat. And we'll come to the album in a second, but I want to introduce you to an audience maybe don't know you so well.
What's the crack?
You're in Waterford. What part of Waterford did you grow up in?
Tremore, just down by the coast, yeah.
Beautiful part of the world.
Lovely part of the world, down by the hurdy-gurdies.
You got slagged for your love of music growing up, I believe.
Did, yeah. I think where I'm from is a beautiful part of the world, but growing up there's only two sort of avenues to do music, and that was either through the local choir or the local musical, school musical, both of which are a risky endeavour when you're going into a secondary school of 1,300 all boys, you know.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it because you're the sports guy as well?
Yeah.
Made it harder?
Yeah, there's a big sort of, I don't know, I only learned kind of figured out what it was when I went into secondary school, like the male stereotype, you know, the kind of sports. And I loved playing sport. I loved doing all that sort of stuff. I liked painting. I thought everybody should be doing everything all the time.
Yeah.
But I realised that when you go into school and stuff like that in secondary school, that real guys like play sports and they like whatever, whistle at girls and they don't talk about how they feel and stuff like that. So that's what I tried. I tried to kind of dumb myself down like most teenagers do at that point in their life, you know.
You smashed through all of those ceilings anyway.
Yeah, we got there. Got there eventually.
But you were a very good hurler.
It was all right now, yeah. I did my bit. I made life difficult for better hurlers. That was my main job.
But you made in county level, you were playing minors?
Yeah, I played development, played minor, bit under 21. And then I left for London, basically. I was playing, hurling was like my main thing before I left.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Up to what age then did you?
Up to like under, I left for London like 2 weeks after my 20th birthday. So,
So had you played on, you would have been in.
I would have been up there. Caught up. All the guys that are playing with Waterford now are lads that I played with, Stephen Bennett and Ozzy Gleeson and Desi Hutchinson and all those guys. So yeah, I loved it. I had a dream that I wanted to be like a county hurler and a singer. Yeah. County's too hard.
no one's tried it. It hasn't worked.
Yeah,
it should work.
County was too much.
You kept your hurling fitness anyway, because I've seen you leaping over barriers in your shows and things like that. That not many pop stars could do.
Yeah. I don't know. I love. I just love having the crack and doing mental things at gigs.
Your teenage years were obviously harder than most because there was terrible grief and tragedy in your family. Can you tell us about Hugh and Laura?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in a family of five, of the youngest of three kids, and my sister tragically passed away when I was 16. She was 21, and my brother passed away a couple of years after. And yeah, it's very, very sad, obviously, and it's really, really difficult time at the point when I was like 18 and trying to figure out, like most kids, what you're supposed to do and your CAO and all this stuff, like big decisions that you're kind of confronted with as a entering into the world of semi-adulthood. And at that time, I was just trying to kind of keep my head above the water. And music became that sort of refuge and that place where I could express myself, because, like, to be honest, like, what 18-year-old lad around the world knows how to express himself emotionally? We don't, you know. And
yeah,
music was that for me.
That would press fast forward on it for anyone, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
They suffered cystic fibrosis.
Yes. Yeah.
Was it just 2 years apart?
Yeah.
And you're left there as the last kid in the family.
Yeah. Yeah.
Extraordinarily hard.
Yeah, it was tough. Yeah, it definitely was. And I guess it took a long time to kind of, like, I don't know, number one, to kind of accept, and then number two, to figure out your place in the world and after it. And for me, their legacy. My sister was an incredible horse rider. She was
really
training for the Olympics, actually, 2012.
Go away.
Yeah, she was. Her story is actually, I mean, I could go on and on about her. She's the biggest inspiration that I have. She had cystic fibrosis and never told anybody. Like, nobody knew apart from us and the family, because, like, it's her thing. She didn't want to, it's her choice, you know. Never sought that sort of support and that sort of comfort, or that sort of, I don't know, like, never sought it. Just wanted a normal life. I was an extraordinarily talented 3-day equestrian rider, and became pretty much professional at that, and competed internationally, competed at the highest level, was training other people's horses, and at one point her health became kind of dropped quite quickly over the space of like a year and a half. But at one point, like, she was competing at international level, not with coaches not being told that she had this, because if they were to know, you can't insure that, you know, you can't select that person for that sort of team if they knew that. So she was competing with like 50% lung function,
wow,
and winning like back to back events. So there is there's an under-21s competition at Tattersall's horse riding event every year, mm-hmm, called the Laura Breheny Memorial, and it's for the best young rider. So yeah, she was, I mean, like, it's an if she can do that, like,
incredible story.
If she can do that, then I can write some songs and see where this goes, you know.
Laura, did she know that you wanted to pursue a career in music?
No. I mean, like, I was a 16-year-old nuisance, you know. We barely got on. Like, what 16-year-old and 21-year-old brother and sister get on? Like, but she came to all the matches, you know. I was barely in music at the time. She came to all my hurling matches, which is, looking back now, is like something I really treasure, you know. So yeah, she didn't have a clue.
But you got on in your own way.
Yeah, in that way, that was a special thing, having her at those things. And I came to her events and stuff, the big ones, because she was out every weekend. But yeah, super special person.
The blue butterfly emoji that you post, that's connected to your family, isn't it?
Agree, yeah. So that's to her. I know it's a symbol for a lot of people with loved ones who've passed away, but her best friend had written a poem for at her funeral called The Butterfly, which then became super, super synonymous with my family and her. And yeah,
it's a lovely symbol, though, that you get to share with your fans, and they all
understand
the language of the emoji when it pops up. And
yeah, and it's something that keeps her there, and keeps reminding me, like, what I'm doing, you know.
And you talk about both of them, don't you, in this album?
Yeah, I to a certain degree, actually. It's a funny one, because there isn't any specific song about my brother or sister, because it's a very hard thing to write about, not emotionally, but it's just, I'm a big critic of myself, and I want, how do you write about something that big? And for me personally, to try get a song that I feel is good enough, you know, to really convey that. And I will get there at some point, I reckon, but I mean, the album has their fingerprints all over it, and how I've my approach to like the years after them passing away and how I've, and that sort of my view towards relationships and my view towards mental health and stuff, and it has their fingerprints in it for sure.
They've inspired you the whole way along.
Yeah, definitely.
Your story then, after you lose both of your siblings, you go to Cork to pursue a law degree, but it doesn't work out. How could you
pursue a career in
have your head in that?
A degree in kebabs and getting kicked out of clubs, basically. I like every kid that's kind of coming out of college or school, it's like, well, my dad is a solicitor, so I was like, I better go do that. I suppose that's what I'm supposed to do. So I went there, but I think, after losing my brother and sister, there was that sort of bone in me that felt, there's something kind of, I felt like broken or switched off, like as in what you're supposed to do. And I just didn't enjoy it. And I couldn't bring myself to keep doing it. Mm. So off I went.
It could have gone off the rails, but you go to London to pursue the music.
Yeah.
Your parents are going through this unimaginable sadness. How did they react to you leaving college? And
they were really supportive. Honestly, they were incredibly supportive because I'm not from a musical family at all. So to go from like playing a couple of gigs in Waterford and
busking outside Pennies,
Claire's. they obviously, like, they were just supportive the whole way through, so I couldn't fault them at all. They've always been supportive.
You must have been fairly solid headed yourself at this point to be able to get to where you are today. But there's open mic nights in London that are very important to you, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, arriving in London, I didn't know anybody, you know, so I was like, I didn't know what the first step was to even begin to have a career in music, you know. So I asked someone who's a singer, and they said, oh, you should go to like a load of open mic nights. And I was like, what's an open mic night? And they're like, it's like karaoke for people who are serious. And I was like, grand, I bet I'll Google all them. And I went to as many as I could, you know.
Singing backing vocals, is that right, for Adele? There we go.
Yeah.
Name dropped.
Yeah, there we go. that was mental. That actually came from an open mic, because it actually paid off. I was singing and then in this house band, and then some guy offered, it's like I was coming home on the ferry back to from Fishguard to Rosslare because I had no money for the flight, and asked me if I wanted to do an Adele gig, and I was like, Adele. And he's like, yeah, next Monday. I was like, yeah, I'm around. And did the sort of Graham Norton special with her, just doing backing vocals.
Really?
First big gig. Yeah, mad.
What was the song?
Skyfall.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. So
big.
Yeah, it was great. They gave me a bunch of sheet music. I don't read sheet music at all. I was just like, I'll listen to the song and sing it.
When you're doing backing vocals for a big star, do you get to meet the star or whatever?
Yeah, well, that's a good one. Well, I did. And I don't think she wanted to meet me. But I got to meet her because we had a lunch break, and I was walking through the studio, big building in London, with a kebab in my hand. And big old juicy kebab.
Fond of his kebab.
Yeah, common theme here. And I got lost going down these halls, and I opened the door and I wandered, wasn't looking where I was going, and I wandered straight into her dressing room where she was getting her hair and makeup done, kebab in hand. And I like looked up, and they turned around and looked at me in like pure silence and shock for like 2 seconds. And I was like, I'm so sorry. And just like slowly, like Ned Flanders, went back into the shadows and closed the door. That's how I met her.
God.
Yeah.
That's as good as any. You know?
Yeah. Kebab guy.
I don't think you've met Elton John, but he knows who you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
He played your song quite early on as well.
Yeah, that was a really special moment. First song I'd released got a lot of support from him and his show on The Rocket Hour. Yeah, so
he's a big supporter of young artists, though, isn't he? When he spots them, he champions them. Yeah.
He's a gem, like, you know. And even having that support that early on really, really gave me a big confidence boost that I was doing the right thing.
We have to talk about, although the success is getting the album out, and it's with Warner Music, isn't it? And
correct, yeah.
You had to go through Berlin and go to Germany. Do they send pop stars to Germany now to make
They do? I don't know. I think for me, it was just like, wherever the interest is, I'm going to go. And I had an inkling that like Germany as a place, they love storytelling and they love, I think, Ireland and Germany musically for some reason. There's some weird connection there. I don't know why.
We don't know.
Because we love Scooter. As, yeah. They have Scooter German.
Like, I don't think we realise as much as the Germans know it about us. Isn't that fair to
yeah,
say?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Because
yeah,
of the language thing.
Yeah.
And but they love a country of 80 million people.
Yeah. They love stories and they really appreciate the music. And I had a feeling that the music would resonate there, and it did. And so, yeah, that's where I went.
That was home for a while.
For a year, yeah. I got signed, like, off the back of COVID. I was still independent, like grinding away, and there was starting to get a little bit of momentum. But I signed with this little German label, indie independent label, and off I went to. I was like, I may as well just try this out here, and went to Berlin for nearly a year. Mm. But I love Germany, but it wasn't home for me. You know,
you got a lot of radio play in Germany. Which
yeah,
it's important in this thing. The point I was trying to build up there is just the cost to an artist of making it nowadays.
Yeah,
you have debts now. You've publicly said this before.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's funny. I think there is a big perception on like social media, this massive highlight reel of success that you see playing to like thousands of people or whatever, that he must be raking it in, but. Like, everything is incredibly expensive. Like, even touring, it's such an expensive endeavor, you know? In order to, like, and obviously streaming doesn't make you any money, you know?
No, we know that. But when you see videos of you playing to huge crowds who have come to see you and they paid in to see you in venues all around the continent.
Yeah.
And it's surprising to us then, and I think you told your TikTok audience, you're 175,000 in debt. I was astonished, disappointed, like, you know?
I mean, yeah, I think artists, you just have to be blind to that to a certain degree. I mean, it's like, luckily it's not debt that's like going to come after me like bad debt, but it's money that you need to clear in order to say that you have £1 in your account, you know, wow. Technically.
Where is the money going to be?
It's all in life. Like, I mean, life, and that's, I mean, to anybody listening, I mean, the best way to describe it is, if you, Oliver Callan, wrote a song right here, right now, and recorded it on your iPhone, put it up on Spotify, and it got 1 million streams, so you own everything and it's yours.
That's a big hit.
And it got 1 million streams, you'll get €3,500 after 8 months, eventually.
Wow.
Yeah, probably around that. But if you did it with a label, and a major label deal would be, I'm your label, it'd be 80-20 to me.
Right.
So okay. I'll take...
Still giving them a call.
Yeah, so I'll take... but then I'll have to, obviously, market you, and I'll have to... get you a video. So the video will be £5,000 or £6,000 or £10,000. So you've got to make that £10,000 back before you get £1 of that 20% of that, whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So there,
we have to be more mindful of this when we're paying for our concert tickets and grumbling slightly at the cost. Well,
it is everything. Everybody's feeling the pinch, you know, and I'm not trying to say that I'm any different. I'm not out like... doing hard labour, like, you know.
No, in fairness, it is. It's tough. It's tough to tour. It's tough to perform. And you sing live. You're not miming.
No, that's true. I do think it's...
And your videos look like they're strenuous.
Oh, my God. I don't know why I do it.
Let's talk about Hard Feelings, which is the... it's back in the... Which hurling club did you film that in?
Butlerstown GAA.
That's
big
home.
Shout
that's
out.
The home that's, club.
That's the home club.
We were oiled up.
Oh, yeah.
This is hurlers. We've never seen them before.
Yeah.
But it's great crack. You are a good crack in your videos. And we should say that you're one of the, I think, rare kind of upbeat male acts out there at the moment. They seem to be quite downbeat a lot of the time.
I mean, I've had enough downbeat songs. So
you have a few of those. But this album is upbeat.
Yeah, it's hopeful.
It's sunny and summery.
Exactly, yeah.
And Hard Feelings, I mean, like, it's just... How can you describe that to the uninitiated?
Well, I mean... Basically, I mean, Hard Feelings as a song is like a petty little song that I wrote because I had really fallen hard for someone, and ultimately, they didn't feel the same way back, and that's life. But we decided,
not bitter at all.
No, not bitter. All good. The visuals, we decided to just go gah, but make it sexy gah.
There's a lot of skin on show. Thirst trap.
Spicy
content, is that what they call it now?
Guys can be sexy too, you know. You don't, it's all right to show a bit of skin, you know.
This might be a weird place to go directly after that conversation.
Go on.
But your parents must be very proud of you. After everything you've gone through and everything you've done. Is your dad still a solicitor, by the way?
He is, yeah. He's well, he's solicitor slash biker slash he's one of the best bridge players in Ireland. Actually.
Bridge players?
Yeah, he's actually unreal at bridge. And he only took it up around like 6 years ago.
Wow.
But he, like, he lives for the bridge, like. Lives for the.
You have to bring that to the TikTok audience as well. Explain that.
Yeah, they're super proud, and they were at a like my little album launch last night. Like they come to every gig, you know. So
wow,
and yeah, they're amazing.
And your mum, there must be music in there somewhere.
Well, my mum's a dancer, like so she'll say that's where it came from. That's where she'd say. So
she's a dancer by profession, or is she just she's a dancer at home.
She's a dancer in her heart, you know. She goes to whatever. But yeah, that's where CSCIA comes from.
Listen, I really enjoyed the chat.
Yeah, me too.
We better tell people about the tour.
Yes.
What's coming up? What are the ones you want to talk about? Because well, you do lots of gigs everywhere.
Well, right now, I mean, the album is out, so...
Yes, get the album.
Get the goddamn album, lads.
Pay for it if
like,
possible.
Yeah, like it's... I'm just out here, but we're doing a tour of Ireland.
You'll have
yeah.
no bother filling these places. The INEC as well in Kerry is a big venue for the whole Munster yeah. region. That's in December. The Ulster Hall in Belfast,
yeah.
which is the hopping city of the country cool. at the minute. And you're all around the world, like you're all around Europe, Germany, the Czech Republic, France, Belgium, and the Brits, they like you too.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really excited.
What's Moncrief? Where's the best website to get all these?
Just Google's good.
Yeah.
I might, if you.
Correct.
Just go to my Moncrief.club or Google.
Skip all of the Sean Moncrief bids. But I think you've killed his Google search.
Oh, gosh. I'm my illegitimate father.
He is of no connection.
Yeah.
Long away to that. Maybe it's fine. That's the important bit for today.
Exactly.
But Moncrief, thanks a million. Good luck.
Thank you so much, Oliver.
Bye bye. Salam. Ah, so lovely messages in for Moncrief. Lots of fans on the messages this morning. 51551 for the text. I bought his album on Saturday and a ticket for the Limerick gig on Sunday. Great gig in Limerick last year. Continued success to Chris. That's from Martin. Someone says, I came across Moncrief, first of all, doing a tribute with the RTÉ Concert Orchestra to the songs of Leonard Cohen a few years ago. He stole the show with his talent. I can't stop listening to his Hard Feelings record. It's quite something. What a song, what a voice. Cannot wait to see him live in a field with a pint and sunshine, says Nuala. Well, the sunshine is optional for the sky, Nuala. What a gorgeous young man. His personality just shines through. Moncrief, what a dote. Another person up Waterford. So proud of him. Maybe it's fine. The album number one in Ireland at the present time.